Find this podcast and others like it at the number one new media network, Podshow.com. Better, faster, stronger. And now with new minty fresh scent.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow. LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, making more possible.
I've turned the key to Pandora's box and I'll never be forgiven. The skeletons are taking on a life of their own. Unapologetic about all that has been hidden. The dance of social graces exhausts me to the bone. I've allowed myself to be a smiling, willing victim. To those of you in shark skin suits who claim to be so wise, through every metamorphosis I've taken what you've given. But when the money disappeared, you left me here to die. Now all I see, all I got is me. But there's so much more than I.
And this is Windy City Queer Cast. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick.
And it is show number 64, winding down to the end of 2006. Uh-huh. What a year it has been. Hello, Peter.
Hello, lady.
How are you?
I'm fantastic. Are you done with all the, you know, did you do everything you needed to do in 2006?
The holidays are wrapped up. Yeah. Christmas is unwrapped, but the holidays are wrapped up, and that's when I usually know that I've done all I need to do here.
Excellent.
Folks. No, really great time. Tennessee, awesome, beautiful. I love being home. I love being home for the Tennessee holidays. It's like a Tennessee mountain Christmas,
Tennessee mountain Christmas, as Dolly Parton says.
And
I just like eating.
I like eating, too. All the good eats were made for me since I didn't have my family's Thanksgiving food because I went to my partner's, and though we had lovely food there, you know, it's not your family's eats.
It's not what you cut your teeth on, literally.
Yeah. So I had some good eats and a very quick trip because I'm in rehearsals. So we're back at it as of today. And, you know, it's a blow in the wind right now. I like being in rehearsals. You just finished your show.
I did.
You finished your show right before Christmas.
I did. No. We got one.
Oh,
we got two more. We got the last
weekend.
Well,
then people can still come.
People can still come and see
us. Well, I've already seen it. And it's fucking fabulous. So funny.
It is so kind.
Of course that it's a holiday tradition. And I was there and Cynthia from the office and, you know, and then all the other
people. From the Windy City office. Not the show, the office.
No, from the Windy City office. And I bet she wishes she was on the show, the office. She'd be making a lot more money. But, you know, so many people just enjoying the holiday sick fun tradition of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
It's dirty.
Makes your face hurt.
It does. It's
which
dirty
is one
fun.
Of the two things I like to do that makes my face hurt.
And it makes me cold because I'm half naked up there on stage. Ooh. So there you go.
But yeah, so you have two more shows. I'm in rehearsals for previews, which open January 10th. So I'm in the thick of sad times during these glad times.
Aww, but that's okay.
New Year's right around the corner.
Just in another minute. You know, this time of year, the celebrity news is just out of control.
Yeah, it is.
It's just really out of control. And I, you know, as usual, I like to farm the internets for things and to prepare to the shows and to get everything together. And
we don't have to farm the internets for damn Rosie O'Donnell. She's
Bitch
is a mess. And I mean, we didn't really talk about this because of just timing and the holidays, but the whole Rosie Donald, you're a fat little dyke or whatever he said. I don't know what he said.
He just called her a fat little bitter woman. And he said she's the worst thing for the show and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, their ratings are going to plummet. I wonder if their ratings are going up. It'll be interesting to see this quarter, this, you know, fourth quarter of 2006, if The View is up. Because I swear to God, it feels like we talk about her now every two yeah, weeks.
I think we do, actually. But she's...
And did you see those photos?
Yeah.
You saw the what's her name? Connors or Tara? What's her name? I can't remember now. I wrote it down here.
Oh, the U.S. Miss USA?
Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, no, I haven't seen those. Or what is it?
Miss USA Nevada. She was dethroned and she was like sticking her titties in girls' mouths and licking on them.
Really?
And head and crotch of like guy in bar and girl in bar. With
And hot.
Holding her thong, like her jeans down, her thong up in a girl's like face, like right in her muff. Showing her boobs, kissing other girls, like tongue sticking out of her mouth. It looked like girls gone wild.
Wow. Well, that's kind of hot though, but that's not Miss, that's not Miss USA material. That's not so good.
Not so good, but it's Nevada. You know, she's probably a Vegas girl for frick's sake.
Well, that's what I was thinking. If you're born in the areas, you're going to show your areas. That's just how, that's a generalization for all of our Nevadans. If you're there.
Oh, we love Nevada. Be crazy.
You crazy
you're
Mormons.
You're born in a crazy hot desert land.
Right. Exactly.
Glittering lights.
What the hell are your people doing there anyway?
Lots of blow and lots of prostitutes, and lots of cash and crazy.
Have you ever seen the American Experience documentary on Las Vegas?
No.
It's incredible.
I've seen Bugsy. That's all I know about the Las Vegas Experience.
Oh, no, you should see. Well, you saw Viva Las Vegas.
Yes.
Okay. So you saw that too. That's a good little slice of it. Oh my God. Anne Margaret.
Viva
with
Las
her big
Vegas.
Tree trunk legs and dancing and kicking. But anyway, the American Experience documentary is just, it's a wonder to behold. It's a two-parter.
Yep.
There was so much that they had to make it two parts, which they never, ever do for American Experience. It's either like one part or it's a miniseries and it's like eight parts. So it was really great. They show everything from, people used to sit on the buildings and watch them explode atomic bombs.
How crazy is that?
That's insanity. Anyway.
But, yeah.
So
that's Vegas. That's what I said. Lots of blow, lots of prostitutes, lots of dough.
Right. I did not see the pictures of her, but I need to definitely find them. So Janine Garofalo, we may actually get her on we love her. I love Janine Garofalo.
I love Janine Garofalo. Janine Garofalo worked with my girlfriend in the Laramie Project.
Really?
They were on screen together. Lots of screen time.
Lots of drama. Which is good for her because
she has lots of drama.
Well, she's going to have lots of drama.
Oh,
she's,
what's going on?
They're going to do a CBS pilot for her doing a law drama. I haven't heard the title yet.
She was on, the last season of The West Wing and was an interesting character, very interesting character on The West Wing.
So I hope that works out for her. The pilot takes off. I haven't really heard too much timings on it, only that it's in the works, which is good. We love the Janine Garofalo. Guess who's Preggers?
Who is Preggers?
Tootie.
Tootie is Preggers.
Kim Fields, who's 37 now. God, that makes me feel old.
She was just here in the vagina monologues like a couple of years ago, wasn't she? The vagina monologues.
Well, she was. It was good she was talking about
it's
it.
Good.
She's 37. She's pregnant. She's looking glorious. And she's just absolutely glowing.
Tootie's Preggers.
Tootie's
like
Preggers.
That.
I can't remember
Let's
her
just
husband.
Call that. Kathleen, we just call this show Tootie's Preggers.
Tootie's Preggers
on the
right there. Just put that right there. Right up on it.
I hope they don't think I'm Tootie or that I'm Preggers.
Amy Matheny is not pregnant, I promise. But
if I am, it's Peter Maverick's child.
Have you ever heard any of her spoken word stuff?
No.
She actually goes by the name Blondie Locks.
Yes.
Because she's like blonde and got dreadlocks and everything. And she has an album called Smooth Is Spoken Here. And I listened to a bunch of samples from it. And it was quite amazing.
Very groovy. Well wishes to Tootie Kim Fields.
Tootie, she's doing it.
Their skates and her stripy leg warmers.
Right. Now, are you a Harry Potter geek?
I am. And they have announced the next book. And I have to say, already done that special order thing.
Really?
Yep.
You geek.
On the website.
Nerd alert. Nerd alert.
I like the Harry Potter. No, why am I a nerd? More of like a kid. I love them. I love them so much. I love the movies. Every one of them I've been utterly satisfied with. I've had no qualms. It just takes me there.
You just like Hermione's cleavage.
I don't.
She's
either.
Got big boobies. She's not a little kid anymore.
Well, not anymore.
She's a big girl.
But it sounds very ominous. And I've said this on the Queercast before. I don't remember when it was, but I'm having a deja vu if I didn't say it, that I think Harry will die in this last book. And I
really?
Think it's really, it's going to be huge and epic.
I've only seen the first movie. I've never read any of the books. I've never watched anything.
Peter Maverick.
I just don't get into it. It's
really?
Like, yeah, it's not my thing.
Okay, can I tell you that if you've only read the first book or only seen the first movie?
I've only seen the first movie, that's all.
Okay. The first book, here's my Harry Potter story. I'll do it quick. But what do you got?
Time.
Nothing but time, and
it's
this is
internet,
free air.
Right?
So here's the deal. Like, I got my ex-girlfriend, when we were not exes, when we were together, gave me a Harry Potter book, mm-hmm. but she accidentally gave me Harry Potter's second book.
Oh.
And she didn't realize that she'd got me the second book, but I did. As soon as I like started to turn the pages, had a big number two on it. And I was like, oh. So I ran out and I bought the paperback of the number one.
And
I
thought, that's why they broke up.
No. But, so, you know, I thought, well, I'll read number one. And I thought number one was fine.
Mm.
I thought it was nice. You know, now at the time, only one and two were out.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, it's fine. It's nice. I enjoyed it. Fine. You know, something to read before I fell asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I felt like the second one was my gift. So I kind of had to read it. I got so hooked on two, and three is just over the moon.
Really?
And I so enjoy reading them, even though once I've read them, like I said, I'm not going to be picky about them. They're so fantastically filmed. I just love them. So my encouragement to you is to, if you've seen one, is to read two and see if it hooks you. Because it really, they get every year she gets darker. The themes get more mature. It gets much more sophisticated. And she like ages the reader as the reader has grown up, I think, with these books.
Well, that's good.
And it's I'm very excited. But it's got this horrible name. What is it? It's like the Death Hauntings.
Called Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows.
Hallows. There you go.
So whatever that particular
But she
means.
Is. But I can tell you that, you know, she was a woman, which I'm sure everybody knows this story. She's now the wealthiest woman in Britain. She was on welfare when she started writing these books, and she was writing them in coffee shops, and she is continuing to write this book seven in coffee shops. She is in some small coffee shops in Scotland where she has a home, and in a countryside of England. So very fascinating.
Yeah.
What a woman. What a story.
What a story. Yeah,
what
truly
a
what a story.
Story. What
good
a divine, divining rod she was handed.
That's what it's all about. So
Peter, I have to tell you, we aren't going to talk about it today because we're going to talk about it next week since I haven't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I did get the Dreamgirls Deluxe CD for Christmas from my girlfriend who is super awesome and knew I'd love it. And she went to four different stores to get the deluxe two disc. I have to tell you, and I love me some Jennifer Holliday. Mm-hmm. I really do. But Miss Hudson kicks her
ass. I'm sorry. I completely disagree.
Oh, well.
I heard the song. And you know what did? You know what killed? You know what sealed Jennifer Hudson's fate for me now? I'm sure on screen she's gorgeous. And her voice is so beautiful. Her voice is so incredible. But there's that one line where Jennifer Holliday goes, ha ha. Jennifer Hudson does not do that.
No, but what Jennifer Hudson does has so much yearning in it, and it has so much pain in it. And I love, and we're talking about the song, of course, I am telling you. But what I loved about it is the first time I listened to it, I got these, a different kind of chills, as opposed to like listening to somebody and going, okay, can she wallop it? Can she ha-ha? Can she do all this big stuff? She started off in such a small place of her voice that was so plaintive that when she opened up, it was just so large and so dramatic. So I can't wait to see it on the screen because I am only hearing it. But I was so impressed with that. And, you know, in theater and movies are two totally different mediums.
Absolutely.
And you cannot perform often a song with that much drama the same way on stage as you can. So when I say that it kicks her ass, I just mean, like, I don't mean that she's better than Jennifer Holliday at all. I just mean, like, she really just did. I mean, she just knocked it out of the ballpark for her medium. And I think probably the more intimate and emotionally delicate journey. And it's weird to say emotionally delicate on a song that's that fucking large and has this huge damn riff
huge,
in the middle that is awesome.
Thing.
I can't wait to see what's happening in that middle riff that is not on the Broadway recording of Jennifer Holliday. But really. So anyhow, I've said it. If you haven't seen the movie like me, go out and see it so we can all dish about it. But I highly recommend the disc greatly.
She did a great job, but she's still not number one to me. And I think that, like you said, she started at a different place and she comes from a different place. I heard much more church in Jennifer Hudson.
Mm.
throughout the entire album. You can really, to me, that's a very hardcore church trained voice, yeah. But it's also a very young voice, which is cool that she's going through this huge process. But I mean, yeah. This is a huge, this yeah. is the biggest picture, I think,
yep.
In the States this year.
Yep.
So it's just, you can hear all that adding into all the music and the emotions and the character. And I think it's a good character for her because in many ways it's mirroring these weird parts of her life.
Yeah. And I think it's really interesting to listen to Broadway recordings and to listen to film recordings, mm-hmm. because you understand kind of the difference. And you can also tell this sometimes when you listen to American recordings and British recordings of even Broadway shows.
Absolutely.
But there's kind of a balls to the wall attack that happens in Broadway American musical theater. You can hear it on the Chicago album, just a roughness and a rawness that you can tell these singers, because you know when they're recording a Broadway show, they literally have to go in on a Monday, because when they record mm-hmm. the album, they're in full run,
right.
And
it's,
you know,
just as if they were, yeah.
Yeah, and so they are doing it in that little sound studio the way they do it, which is, I would imagine, a very different approach that they come to it with movies, with like Chicago, the film, with this soundtrack.
Well,
there's just a lot
a
of
live
subtle
audience
differences.
Versus not, you know, singing into yeah. a microphone in a glass yeah. studio. That's a whole other world.
Yeah, but I think it's just what I love was, I kind of love that she didn't do a lot of the same things as Jennifer yeah. Holliday, because I was so fascinated by some of the choices that she made. There's a moment in the end where she sustains a note kind of flat without vibrato and then scoops into the vibrato, and it just sent chills down my bones. So I give her huge applause for not trying to copy Jennifer Holliday. And really, I think there will be many people that this groove will get in their head, and there will be two different versions in the same way that there's great versions by Sinatra and Garland of different songs. So
I do not, however, want to hear any of the remixes.
Because, I know you
because
don't.
They're horrible. I mean,
I know
the
you
original
don't.
Ones are terrible as well.
I
so.
Know you don't. Hey, I did want to say that, you know, our next show is going to be our big show about the year in review. Mm-hmm. Our next podcast will be joined with Andrew Davis and Amy Wooten of Windy City Times. Andrew Davis, the managing editor, and Amy Wooten, the senior news reporter. And Peter and I are going to kind of talk about the year in review as well. So don't miss that podcast. And if people have listened to some of our shows, or you're trying to turn them on, I think it'll be a really great show to just kind of get a perspective on us, and also just to get your kind of year at a glance from us. Mm-hmm. But today's show,
we have Levi Christ.
Levi Christ.
He's such a handsome gentleman, and he's got those golden pipes that I just adore so much.
Yeah, I dig his music so much, and you've been listening to his music in the show.
Absolutely.
We opened the show with Levi, and his new CD is The Gospel According to Levi. Sounds totally appropriate here. Mm-hmm.
Which is a very bold statement, if you ask me.
I think so.
The title is a very bold statement. But,
I think so.
It's actually, I think if I were to have to sum it up, not that I need to sum it up, but if I were to sum it up, it's a good journey CD. It's one of those good journey CDs that
we're
it
not
takes
talking
you,
Steve Perry.
No. No.
It, should have
been gone. Oh, you totally sidetracked me by saying
sorry.
It takes you someplace and it moves you around. So I'm very impressed with his music and with his sound. And I'm looking forward to what the next CD is going to be, and the next CDs, because I think this is the beginning of something very, very good for him.
Fantastic.
So we like that.
And also our regular cast of characters are with us in today's show and throughout the rest of the week. So only two more shows in this year of 2006 and then the new blue yonder, 2007.
Can you feel a brand new day?
It's true. It's true.
Truly. Absolutely. So we'll be right back after this.
At the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee, my parents keep on telling me, just being here is winning.
What does it take to get into the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee? It takes confidence.
I'm taking it all. You're all going down.
It takes dedication.
I only sleep 3 hours a night.
It takes family values.
I'd just like to thank my fathers for teaching me that being an adopted, half-Jewish, mixed-race child with two gay dads is all it's cracked up to be.
And now, it only takes one phone call to get into Chicago's very own production of Broadway's Tony Award-winning musical comedy. Spelling Bee is now playing at the Drury Lane Theater, Water Tower Place. So call 312-902-1400 or go to BroadwayInChicago.com today.
Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Making your travel plans for fall? Thinking about that Christmas visit to mom's house in your old bedroom?
Let the experts at gayhoteldiscounts.com find the luxury you're looking for at a price you can afford. If you need a queen in Phoenix or a king in Miami, gayhoteldiscounts.com can find the perfect room for you and your partner. Visit our website for gay destination cities and extracurricular ideas to dance off that second serving of mom's apple pie. GayHotelDiscounts.com for the gay traveler in you.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced, hoping, knowing, someday, you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the big time.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt, and you're still a crowd pleaser. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny, too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News. On December 19th, President Bush signed an altered Ryan White CARE Act that shifts some federal AIDS money to rural areas and the South. Earlier in the month, the U.S. House agreed to reauthorize the $2.1 billion act after opposition was withdrawn from New York and New Jersey senators who feared losing money under the five-year renewal of the law. The Senate passed the bill.
The California Supreme Court has unanimously agreed to decide whether the state's ban on same-sex marriage violates a constitutional ban on discrimination. The justices are reviewing an October decision by the First District Court of Appeal, which ruled that California marriage laws do not discriminate because same-sex couples can get the most rights the state bestows upon married couples.
Massachusetts same-sex marriage advocate Sarah Loy was attacked by Larry Sirignano, leader of the Boston-based Catholic Citizenship Group, when she showed up carrying a sign reading, "No discrimination in the Constitution." Sirignano rushed from behind the lectern where he was standing and tackled Loy to the ground, allegedly saying, quote, "You need to get out. You need to get out of here right now," end quote. Loy suffered cuts and bruises. Charges may be pending.
In Scottsdale, Arizona, Paradise Valley Town Councilman Brian Cooney is offering a $10,000 cash reward for information about an assault on a gay couple outside a restaurant. Detectives continue to search for as many as seven men suspected in the beating of Gene Rolland, 28, and Andrew Frost, 19, that took place outside of Frazier's Steakhouse.
Alex Saez, a part-time dancer at the New York City gay club Splash, is suing the bar and HX, the city's biggest GLBT club guide, after his picture appeared in an ad identifying him as a porn star. He says in his million-dollar lawsuit that the publicity over the ad cost him his job at a children's clothing store.
And that's your Windy City Queercast News.
Thank you, parents. We hope you enjoyed the fifth graders' orchestra recital.
What if wherever you went, you got more than you were expecting?
Hi, Daddy!
Hey, thanks for watching the kids.
Anytime.
How were they?
Good.
No problems?
Nope. Oh, and I taught Noah his multiplication tables, and I've got Wendy reading Shakespeare.
At LaSalle Bank, we think more is precisely what you should expect. More responsiveness, more service, more convenience. In a word, more.
Hey, Billy!
Hi, Mr. Schmidt.
What are you doing in the bushes?
Oh, I was getting your newspaper.
My newspaper?
Yeah, I must have been off balance when I threw it, and I totally missed the porch.
Oh.
I just didn't want you to have to go looking for it.
Thanks, Billy.
And with any luck, our philosophy will catch on everywhere. LaSalle Bank, making more possible. LaSalle Bank N.A., member FDIC.
Windy City Queercast is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago and the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. Can you spell hilarious? See the bee everyone's buzzing about. For tickets, visit spellingbeethemusical.com/Chicago.
Hi, Neil D. Paris here from NewWorldAstrology.com, Windy City's very own astrologer. Now you can have a personal reading based on your own birth chart. Discover your life path, your gifts and challenges this lifetime, relationship compatibility, career, finance, and more. Practical advice using real astrology. It's unique to you. you'll be amazed what your birth chart reveals. Everyone has a unique life purpose. What's yours? Find out more at newworldastrology.com.
This is Katie Curtis, and you're listening to Windy City Queercast.
Got something to say? Call us today. 312-21-BE-GAY.
Hey, yeah, oh, hey. Survive some way. He's got a long road haul. Somebody somewhere, yeah, has got a mind to give it all. Now Lord, won't you make that someone hopeful? Lord, won't you make him strong? Yes. Because we all got a stubborn before standing tall. And I know that it ain't easy.
Levi Christ has a career filled with entertaining. He started when he was very young, and he's worked in theater as Roger in the national tour of Rent, film with the movie Frailty with Bill Paxton and Matthew McConaughey, one of those People Magazine sexy men, and to his music, his CD, One of the Ones, where he just invests his heart in so many different forms of musical expression. And now his new CD coming out in January, The Gospel According to Levi. And we are so thrilled to have him on the Queercast. Hey, Levi, hey. How are you?
Hey, Amy, how are you?
I am great. Yeah, it's great to be here with you. Hey, now listen, I hear that you were born in East Tennessee. That's all the bio says. And I was born in East Tennessee, so I want to know where you were born.
Well, you might be one of the few people who actually know where Oliver Springs is.
I actually do know where Oliver Springs is.
Okay, I was graduating class of five people, valedictorian with a C average. And,
you did your people proud, Levi.
I like to excel when I can. Yeah, it's right outside of Oak Ridge, Tennessee. It's right off, you know, Knoxville. Sure. What part are you from?
I am from Cleveland, Tennessee, which is where Lee University is. And yeah, and so that's where I'm from, outside of Chattanooga. But Oak Ridge, you know, you're just on that path as we are, where we see signs that say nuclear plant escape route, and they're all over because of all the Oak Ridge has all those huge nuclear plants. So that's how come we all turned out gay, is what I said, in East Tennessee. So
I
many of
probably.
Us.
Oh, gay or cancerous?
One or the other.
Is that how that one Oak Ridge boy got the deep point?
People who would think gay is a cancer.
Yeah, well, I don't think it's a cancer, but I think it definitely is spreading across East Tennessee. I know more homosexuals from East Tennessee than any other part of the world, and I have not met them while I was living in East Tennessee. I've met them like this, like doing this interview with you. Well, now, how did you discover these early musical abilities that you have? I mean, you're a singer-songwriter. You know, what was kind of that early spark? Because it's a very musical area that we're from, based mostly on religion. But where was your start?
Well, I came out of the womb singing. I remember my grandmother telling me a story about my great-grandmother watching me in the little playpen area and warning my mother that I was going to be an entertainer. Apparently, I had a crayon, you know, gripped in my little fist, like, and then I graduated to a garden hose, so I'd stand outside and sing into that. But the musical side of it started really coming back home from my kindergarten graduation. You know the little tune that we all march down the aisle to, Pomp and Circumstance? I came home and just started picking it out, both hands, by ear, having my brother work the pedals. And my parents ran over to the piano and said, holy shit, we need to give this boy some piano lessons. He's got a knack for this. So it kind of smacked us all in the face, and they were really responsible to get me a really good education and ended up going full scholarship for classical piano to Vanderbilt University. And
very good school.
Really was able to get my training, yeah.
Yeah. How did you like Vandy? Because I almost went to Vandy, but they all got dressed up in the morning to go to class. And it was just a little, it was a little proper for me. But I love the school. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous campus, gorgeous place. Now, I actually went there through my sophomore, junior, and senior year of high school. They created a pre-college program where you could do classes that went towards your college credit, and only a select few, and thank God I was one of those, could go in, and we drove 3 hours from Knoxville to Nashville every Monday and Thursday for the last 3 years of my high school career, just getting an education. So by the time I actually graduated high school, I transferred over to a music business college, Southern Baptist affiliated, Belmont University, which I didn't last very long. I got kicked out for being a homosexual, which is a long, drawn-out story.
Well, you know, and this is a similar story to a number of artists that we've talked with. So what was your whole coming out process? I mean, how early did you know? And you have to be, I mean, you got kicked out for a reason. I guess you were either doing something or saying something.
Or doing something.
Well, not exactly. You know, I was a very sincere boy with my fundamental Baptist family, teaching me their way of thinking. And by the time I was 8 years old, I knew that I was having these feelings towards guys. And I remember by the time, it must have been 15, I secretly checked myself into Exodus International program for the healing of the homosexual to become straight. No one knew about it. I had started singing at a different church every weekend and evangelizing by the time I was 12 years old. So all I ever wanted to do was kind of be that, quote, vessel for God, you know. So I knew with this thing inside of me, I had to take care of it. And I went through reparative therapy for 6 years. And I remember being on to starting my second year at Belmont. I had begun to start thinking for myself and looking at all different translations of the Bible and the original Greek and Hebrew words of it, and laid out before me every morning and reading and studying. My roommate comes in and says, man, it's been a month and a half, and you've been, what are you studying so fervently about? At the time, of course, I had a Christian record deal. I was active in all the Christian organizations, touring, ministering, all that sort of stuff. And I finally confided in him, first person I ever confided in. I said, I have been dealing with this issue, and I am now at the place where I don't believe really God really has an issue with me being gay. Well, he went and told the Baptist Student Union, who went and told the board of directors, and given my involvement with all the Christian organizations and whatnot, they released me.
Wow.
And an intern at my Christian label went to the college, told them, and I lost my Christian record, though.
Wow. So
I had never even done anything with anybody yet. I had never even experienced what it was like, male on male, you know, love. I hadn't even been kissed yet.
So talk to me just a tiny bit, because it's not often. We did talk to Reverend Mel White with Soul Force, and he talked about his experience a little bit too with kind of going into ex-gay ministries. You obviously sought it out. What was that experience like in terms of, you know, how it impacted you?
I think the most dangerous thing about it is that it continues to facilitate such a deep suppression of what I now believe is a very natural part of who we are, our sexuality. And for me, I believe a lot of gay men, if they go through an intense suppression of that at a young age, they're going to kind of bounce towards the other extreme once they come out, until they kind of sort of find a balance. I did the same thing. But I think it really did make it a longer process for me to learn how to love myself, to learn the divineness of who I am, the perfection of who I am, because you begin to hear over and over and believe that you're an abomination to God, and that, you know, in order to be in his favor or to be used, that you must strip away what is a very natural, we know, of course, a very natural occurrence of just, you know, that everyone experiences. The development of our sexuality is part of who we are.
So with this very public outing, did you even get to have a decision whether or not you'd get to be an out artist, or did you just feel like you were out and... you just had to be an out artist from that point on.
No. I actually moved to Los Angeles shortly after that, and I've gone through, Amy, I've gone through like 12 different record labels, and I have made a career of either being signed or courted by major record labels, the last one being Atlantic Records, which I'm back from New York City after they moved me there to do the album 2 years ago. I've only been away from them for like a year and a half.
Right.
But thus began the same process with a different language, and that was, we want to make you this little MTV heartthrob baby, blah, 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 keep it in the closet, be what we create you to be.
Yeah.
And it took me getting to the end of that experience to finally say, you know what I write is universally appealing to everyone, not just us in our own experiences as gay and lesbians, but to everyone. So why should I worry about it? I'm tired of going from one label to the other and trying to be made over into something that doesn't resonate with the truth of who I am.
And people can follow that on your website, because you blog about that, or if they look at the news section of like how many different groups were looking at you, and you have a showcase and it doesn't happen, and all of that. So you can actually see, you can see that struggle from your history.
So,
yeah, absolutely.
So now all this is going on, and of course we know that the best artist is the one that's driven by all kinds of slings and arrows and bumps and bruises and everything going on in life. Tell us a little bit about how this moves into your music. Oh, how all that comes together.
I think it's a twofold answer to that. When I left Atlantic Records, I knew with the appearance of The Apprentice coming, I had enough time to put together an album that I could then kind of pull myself up by my bootstraps, have a product as an independent artist, and bounce that off of the appearance on NBC's The Apprentice. So
tell us about that, because some people may not know what that was at all.
Okay, sure, absolutely. When I was working with Atlantic Records, there was a producer who was called to be a part of this particular episode of The Apprentice, where they were to find an unsigned artist, write a song, produce it, package it, and present it to XM Radio for the XM Cafe channel. I was chosen. There was like over a thousand people that was submitted. It was a surprise to me. So I ended up working with the producer I had been working with on this show, one for my team. XM Radio debuted my last album, One of the Ones, to the world on XM Cafe, and it was a perfect launching pad. Since then, they've put me on stage with Herbie Hancock and Quincy Jones and Snoop Dogg and Collective Soul and so amazing people. But as back to the initial question, when I was looking at the material before me that I had written, a lot of the stuff that I would have probably recorded on my own now belonged to Atlantic Records for a period of time. And I had all these very honest ballads staring me in the face, songs I had written about different guys that have had an impact on me, whether I dated them or they were friends of mine or a straight guy I fell in love with or a couple that I admire. And it was the last suggestion, I think, that the universe was saying, you know what, tell your story. Tell the journey of your heart trying to find who you are in the context of love. Record these songs. Let people know that each song is about a different guy, and put an end to the madness, because I've worked too hard to own who I am to hide it any longer. And so that was kind of the moment it snapped for me. So after The Apprentice aired, and some of the press hit for that, I went to gay.com and I said, I'd like to come out officially, professionally, and tell my story, you know?
Wow, that's totally amazing. And I know that you had a similar revelation earlier in your career when you went to go see a play called Southern Baptist Sissies. And we just had Del Shores on the show not a few weeks ago because there was some controversy around the tour with the most recent tour actually coming to Tennessee with Sordid Lives and Southern Baptist Sissies. How did you start putting yourself on stage in that way, where you got to take on another character and embody that type of artistic expression?
All right, well, first I have to say Del Shores has been an amazing influence, and probably the primary influence for me since I moved to Los Angeles. I wasn't here in LA very long before I was walking down a street one evening with a few friends of mine down Melrose, and we saw an advertisement for the play Southern Baptist Sissies. And they were familiar with his work, drugged me in, And by the middle of, by the intermission, I was in a fetal position on the floor, crying my eyes out, just trembling. Those cries you just really wish you could shut the hell up because everybody's scaring,
yeah.
But you just can't, you know. And I went up to this man during intermission. I was like, do you like this play? And he was like, well, I'm sort of fond of it since I wrote it.
Funny.
And he came up to me, kind of held my hand through the second act, and then at the end of the night, I said, you can come back and see this as many times as you want in order to put the past behind you. I'd never known that there were other kids out there that had gone through what I had gone through, that you know, that would bolt up out of bed in the middle of the night when the train passes by because they thought it was the rapture and they were going to be left behind,
yeah.
You know, and all that kind of stuff I had in common with them, you know. It's kind of weird. So after seeing the play 36 times, I decided to write a song to kind of close the chapter of that life for me, which is a song called Stained Glass Window, which mm-hmm. one day I was hanging out with Dale's kids over his house, and I was like, Dale, did I ever play you this song that I wrote based on your play? And I played it for him, and he was like, baby, that's the theme song. You need to start singing that after every show. So, you know, cut to present. I just got off the road with the tour, Southern Baptist Sissies. And it's really wonderful that it corresponds so clearly with my own journey, and being able to contribute to that is complements so much what I want to accomplish through my own material.
I didn't know you were on the tour, so you know Sean Wiggins as well.
Yeah, I love her, man. She is so good.
Yeah, old friend of ours, and she was just on the show as well. Well, I have to ask the million-dollar money question. I'm the lesbian who thinks Matthew McConaughey is hot and cute, and I just think his little goofy Southern self is he's fuckable, and he's a man. So what is he really that cute, or, you know, Peter doesn't love him, so
no.
we differ on this.
Is that Peter laughing in the background?
Yeah, being catty, and yeah, he's not my favorite, not at all.
I think he's cute. So how was the Matthew?
Well, it was, all that was such a whirlwind of experiences. I never desired to act at all. And I ended up knowing someone who knew someone who was auditioning for an independent movie, one of the leads, and they suggested I go out for it. And at the end of the day, I ended up with one of the leads of this independent film, and we won a couple film festivals, and all of a sudden, casting directors and casting people and agents are knowing about, you know, who I, you know, this new kid's come to town and acting or whatever. And so it turns out that landed me that role. And so this is a matter of maybe 3 months, and all of a sudden I'm sitting, you know, with a role in Bill Paxton's directorial debut. So I was pretty much shitting in my pants by that point. I walk into the screen test, and they have these four little carts. And if you've seen the movie, there are two younger boys that play the younger versions of me and Matthew McConaughey.
Mm-hmm.
And all four of us were sitting there, and this little, you know, apple crate was empty next to me, and I'm like, okay, apparently that's where Matthew's going to sit, and his apple crate's like touching mine, and I know he's going to be so close. And this is how I dorked out though, Amy, because I agree with you. I had stacks of articles and pictures I had torn out of magazines at a younger age, because he was so dreamy to me, right?
Yeah, he's just like that Southern bad boy, good boy, you know, that could talk sweet to your mama, but could probably do you pretty good in the back of the car, which I think is cute, you know?
She's filthy.
Exactly. Well, I remember sitting there next to him, and like, I couldn't even look at him, and just in a matter of moments, he realized that it was kind of difficult for me, and, you know, grab me in that headlock and knuckle, you know, give me a knuckle sandwich, and just kind of, you know, just buddying around with me to kind of loosen me up and make me realize, you know what, fuck, we're all people, just people, you know, we're doing our thing. And he turned out being just as down to earth as you would have thought he would be.
I just want to know if y'all banged bongos high and naked. Like, that would be great, you know? That's his thing,
that,
right?
Is that calling it these days, bongos?
Well, that's what he did. Remember that whole thing?
Like,
he was found banging his bongos naked and high. I just think he's hilarious.
Oh, my goodness.
He's hilarious.
No, I wish I would have, but... Well, and it turned out at the end of the day, a lot of the stuff that we were going to shoot together started to get weeded out for the sake of, you know, really getting the movie concise. So we even shot, like, for a full day and a half, like, several scenes together. They just ended up being redundant as far as the plot is concerned, so they didn't put him in the movie. But that was the greatest experience of the whole thing, being able to really work some scenes with him one-on-one.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, I know throughout your career you've understood fervor and fervent congregations and crowds and feelings, but I don't think there's anything more high impact than daytime television. And and because I know those fans, they are they are high octane,
a little bit crazy and a little bit nice all at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly. And but
no one ever really know where the line begins and ends with one or the other.
It's very blurry.
Sometimes they trick you. But your song I Should Go ran on a huge storyline on Days of Our Lives. You know, what was that experience for you? And did I am sure that you garnered a lot of fans from that and sales from that song, having just such impact for those Days of Our Lives fans.
It was a huge blessing, and on a personal level more so than financial, because you know manning up and this album, my first out album, my greatest concern was, as a writer, am I still contributing to everyone? Am I still being able to write things that everyone can relate to? And I was afraid that coming out would kind of pigeonhole me, hide, force me away from the rest of the world outside of our community, that they wouldn't embrace my musical expression after that. So when that came along, to find that a song I had written about a straight guy that I had fallen in love with, and he was open and kind and gentle enough to be very accepting of that, and maybe he liked the attention a little too much and led me on. But to kind of capitalize that experience for me and find that it can turn right around and apply to Austin and Carrie, you know, and their budding relationship, was made it all clear for me that that if I continue to write music from the motivation of wanting to, you know, relate, bring everybody together, build an emotional bridge to me and someone who's completely different from me, because we all hurt the same, we all cry the same, we all laugh the same, that sort of thing. And so it really kind of solidified a goal for me as a writer for that to happen.
And that Austin is dreamy as well. So there we go. that's my Matthew McConaughey moment right there. So moving into the new disc, the guy with one of the most, I have to say, I saw the title and was like, this is a bold man. It's called The Gospel According to Levi.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the new, about the new record.
I have to say, I don't know, being that it hasn't been released yet until the 30th of January, I'm not really sure what people's responses are going to be. But for me, I personally had to, like I explained to you about how writing Stained Glass Window for Southern Methodist Sissies was kind of the end of the chapter for me, and I needed to write a lot of songs about the journey we talked about, 6 years of reparative therapy, being a preacher, an evangelist that travels around in different church every weekend, and how coming to terms with myself and in the way I view God, I was kind of left with a lot of things I needed to say to organize religion. Because
don't
believe that they understand the concept of acceptance and love. And even look on CNN, religious intolerance is at the core of all the conflict that you're going to see come across your screen in that hour, you know, with Anderson Cooper's 360. It's like, it's something that I really wanted to spell out from a personal standpoint, as saying, you told me that nothing good would I find inside of me, and here now I know that I'm not going to, you know, accept a religion that's based on fear, and I'm not going to see myself as anything less than divine. And so it takes a confrontational approach on several songs. Probably one of the biggest goals for me was to package it musically in a way that wasn't too masturbatory. You know, I didn't want to be, the lyrics are pretty dark, and I wanted to lighten it up. So everything kind of sounds very top 40, and I hope that doesn't distract from what's going on contextually. I'm anxious to see, because I don't know.
Well, I think we are too, and I think everybody listening to this is now very, very anxious. You heard him say it earlier, January 30th.
And you've heard clips in the whole show, so that's awesome.
Salt and Pepper,
Really?
Show with...
Yes.
He didn't even know that. See, we're even tricking the guests here. Folks, we want you to definitely check it out. All the details will be in the show notes. January 30th comes out, The Gospel According to Levi. You can check him out online, levichrist.com. All that will be in the show notes. You can click through and see his pretty smile right there on the front page because he's a very handsome man as well. So,
and it's levichrist.com. Check out that website. You can check on his tour and everything that's going on.
All kinds of news and good information and stuff.
All that good stuff. Levi, thanks so much for being on with us.
Hey, guys, it's just been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me, really.
Open your eyes to the future, love. Open your eyes to the future, love.
And folks, thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, making more possible.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com. So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows at windycityqueercast.com and in iTunes.
And email us for giveaways at WCMGpromo@AOL.com.
Folks, we want to tell you that the next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
Come together in a future love. Future love. Everybody come together in a future love. Yeah, 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 yeah.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show and Limelight.